We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit mte.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better
since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers
since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
I remember that first radio show I did when we came on the air, 1947. That was a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Much younger then.
You've aged gracefully, sir.
Thank you. I'm only, 90 or so.
Yeah, you look great.
Thank you. So, what's going on? We're talking about the Rutherford County Farmers Market, the Lane Agri Park Agriculture Extension, and you are the Agriculture Extension agent, Justin Stefanski.
I am.
They tell me.
Yeah.
Do you ever have problems with that? Do they call you something else?
I have been called Jason my entire life.
You know, that's weird because Mike is what I don't know why.
Mike.
Hey, I'm Scott. Hey, Mike. I don't know
That's
what it is.
One.
It's like everybody's got another name out there.
Right.
And people get them confused. I don't know why people.
It's the universe's way of saying you should have been named Mike and I should have been named Jason.
Jason and Mike.
And I wear a name tag a lot of days, too. And
do
I
you
think people see the J, the S, and the N, and they just use context clues. It must be Jason.
Yeah. And you know, it's always awkward when you run into somebody, you know who they are. You don't remember their name. They've got a name tag on. And you purposely just barely, briefly look down at it, you know?
Yeah.
And then you see the first letter.
Already forgotten your name.
Yeah. Well, Bill. Bill.
Mike.
Steve is another one I've been called a lot.
You know what? I could see Steve.
Yeah.
I could totally see that.
Well, it starts with an S.
Yeah. It's close. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so what's happening at Lane Agri Park this time of year?
Well, we have a winter market going on now for the first time. I think we had done it many years ago, but on Fridays. Now, our typical farmer's market during the growing season in the summer was Tuesdays and Fridays. But for Fridays from 8 to noon, we have a wintertime market that will be on the small side of the farmer's market building. And the few times that I've been over there over the last couple weeks, it has been phenomenal. We got a good diversity of vendors. We've got artisans. We've got baked goods, canned goods, and of course the winter crops are coming in. So we're talking like leafy greens and cabbages, kale, stuff like that.
Brussels sprouts,
you got it. Spinach, lettuce, carrots, onions, stuff like that. So
cool. I've never had fresh Brussels sprouts, you know. And when we buy them, I don't know if you've seen these before at like the grocery stores. They've got these frozen box Brussels sprouts, mm-hmm. but they're coated in butter.
I have not seen these.
And you throw them in the microwave.
Sounds like I need to see these.
They're like addictive.
Oh my goodness.
You know, we buy like 10 boxes at a time because each box is like one or two servings.
Right.
It's probably two or three servings, but you know.
This sounds amazing.
I need one serving.
I do love Brussels sprouts.
But I've never had fresh ones.
You know, the fresh ones are, they're good. I mean, they're what you would expect. They got that crisp, that crunch. And, you know, I know everything that you buy at the store now, you know, you buy the Brussels sprouts in the bags. They already look kind of wilted.
Yeah.
And you can tell they've been sitting a while.
Lettuce is the hardest to find in the store.
Absolutely. They never look great, do they?
No, never. I don't know what it is. You know, maybe I just don't get there in time when the shipments come in.
That's it.
But they're brown. You got, you know, half brown leaves
right.
or, yeah, it just.
It's a very perishable product for sure.
Yeah, you got to get it fast.
You do.
So if
and, you know, that
grow
stuff
it.
Comes from across the country or sometimes out of the country, you know, especially in the wintertime. A lot of it's coming from California or South America. I opened some blueberries the other day and it said product of Peru.
Really?
And it's just incredible to me where our produce comes from.
It scares me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it sits on a truck or an airplane or a boat. You never know.
First of all, what is it fertilized in? What kind of chemicals do they put on it?
Right. Yeah,
all that stuff.
They're supposed to be very well regulated for consumption in the U.S. market, but is anybody down there to check? Who knows?
And I don't go to Peru much.
No.
you got to wonder, what is the U.S. doing when these products come in? Do they inspect them? I mean, there's no way you can inspect all blueberries.
Not all of them, right. But certainly there are, you know, USDA has very strict requirements from, you know, foreign and domestic growers, but then again, you just don't know.
Does the USDA, do they send people to other countries to inspect farms where food's coming from?
I would have to imagine that they do.
Okay. I don't want that job. That'd be cool.
Go to Peru and check out the blueberries, Mike.
Yeah, I'll do it. I'll be back next week.
Good job, Steve.
Yeah. Thank you, Jonathan.
Sorry, you should have never said that.
That would be a cool
gig. It's a cool job.
I mean, you guys do that in Tennessee.
We do. Yep. So, you know, I'm based in Rutherford County, but we have agents that, you know, we're very fortunate. We get to go out and meet people and visit farms and communities. That's the best part of the job.
What's it like visiting some of the farms? I mean, are you ever surprised to find, well, this farm here has generation after generation that's been working it? Do you find that a lot still?
We do. We have a lot of century farms in Rutherford County, and that's a designation that is received to a farm that has been in production or owned by a single family for 100 years. And you'll see those signs. They have an old-fashioned plow.
I've seen them.
It'll say Century Farm, and you know, some of these farms go back 200 years or more.
Wow.
You know, they're like Revolutionary War grant tracks. You know, it's wild to think about the history just in our own county.
So when you look at the history of some of those century farms that are designated as that, do they pass it down in their family? What do they do?
Yeah, it's just inherited. Yeah, it's kept in the family, and thank God for it, because a lot of the farmland is disappearing quickly. So these century farms are a true treasure.
It irritates me. Why did my parents or grandparents buy a great big farm and have a nice old house on it?
Oh,
you know?
Man, I know it. I think about it all the time. You know, I'm not from Tennessee. Forgive
You're
me for that.
You're angry too, then.
I'm angry too. You know, I hear these stories. Oh, yeah, granddaddy had 500 acres and I got 250 of them.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Wow, nice. That's great.
I wish I was you. It is cool they were able to keep it in the family.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, most families over 100 years, they go through struggles. They go through times where you would think they would, you know, sell that house, mortgage that, whatever the case is, but it's very unique and you don't find that.
No. I think about, you know, I worked at Ellington Ag Center, which is in Nashville near the Grassmere Zoo, and that was a big farm, manor homestead, and during the Great Depression, the man that owned it lost that farm.
Really?
And that house where the TDA main offices, Tennessee Department of Agriculture, was his home, and all the grounds there, so it just shows, yeah, I mean, things happen.
That farm, the Ellington, is that the one, that's the one with the white fence around it, right?
It has some white fences. So they used to have the Tennessee Mounted Patrol, the Tennessee Highway Patrol, the mounted unit was there for the horses. So that's why the white fencing was there. The horses no longer are on that property, but the white fence is still there.
Yeah, that's the one that I told you has the original electric chair.
Yes, that's right.
Somewhere parked in there.
I got to find that thing next time.
I don't know if they still have that. They had like a little museum, museum in there.
They still have the museum.
Okay, it was in there.
No kidding. Yeah. I have to go up there and check that out. Yeah, I have to know now if it's still there.
And if it's not still there, you know, on display, it's somewhere in a barn there, or a storage unit.
Sitting in a closet.
Yeah.
Somebody might be using it as an office chair. Who knows?
Wouldn't that be kind of wild? They nicknamed it Old Sparky.
Old Sparky.
And as a kid, I remember walking through there. My dad pointed it out. You know, here's the original electric chair. You know, like, what's that used for, Dad? Stimulation of some kind.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was ever used, though.
Very grim and creepy to think about.
Change those things. Yeah.
You have to wonder how on earth did it end up at the agricultural museum? It's because of the wood it was made out of. You know, this is from a stand of white oak from Hickman County, or who knows, you know.
Well, to this day, I never thought about it as a kid. You know, it was just, okay, that's Old Sparky. But you don't question that stuff as a kid.
Right.
But now looking back, I do wonder.
Yeah, why?
What in the world?
So many questions.
And at agriculture, building, it didn't make sense.
I'll make it a goal to go up there, scout it out, and when I come back next time,
bring it here. I got to put wheels on it, turn it into an office chair.
We will roll Old Sparky down 24 and get it down here for you.
That would be one chair I would not want. It would be so odd. But now, for employees, you have it sitting across from your desk. You need to sit in Old Sparky today. We need to have a talk.
I could see a real financial opportunity for Ellington Ag Center. They could set that chair up and you pay $5 for a photo with Sparky.
Yeah,
that's a real cash maker right there.
Hook a car battery to it. So it's not as extreme of a shock. That way you get a feeling of what it could be like.
Oh. You know, that's also a business. That's for $25, you get a mild shock.
Yeah, that would be unique.
And then for $30, you get your picture taken while you're getting shocked.
People would come from all over.
Absolutely, 100%. They really would.
Yeah, I believe it. Heck yeah, they would. And then you factor in, if you could do that with or in coordination with, you know, some kind of event like Farmer's Market, or tie it all together somehow.
You could just lease it out to different farmer's markets across the state.
Yeah.
Hey, Old Sparky will be here this week.
For rent. That's a good idea. Anyway, going back to the farmer's market, the winter version of it, do you see different farmers come in for the winter farmer's market?
We will have some different producers that come in, but fortunately for us, a lot of our loyal farmers, you know, they were always growing wintertime vegetables. They just didn't have a local venue to sell them in, so we've really opened that door for them to sell here locally so they don't have to drive to Nashville or Franklin.
Yeah. So these farmers who are in the Middle Tennessee area, I know they sell at the farmer's market, but what else do they do? Where else do they sell their crops?
Some of them will have a CSA, which is you basically buy a share for the season, and then you are able to get a fresh box of produce so often. So it'll be monthly, every couple of weeks. And so a lot of them will do a CSA or on-farm sales. Some of the, you know, fruit producers will do a pick-your-own type arrangement. So they're, you know, they're always looking to make an opportunity happen for sure.
My sister did that. I remember it now because she would go, I don't know where the location was, but everybody would go there on like a Thursday or something. That farmer would be there and he'd have a box already prepared,
right?
Yep. Because they kind of pre-order.
Absolutely.
You know, this is what I'll get. It's a neat idea, though.
It is. You know, a lot of farmers started doing that. It really caught on maybe 15, 20 years ago, and you get what is in season. So in the summertime, you're getting your summer crops, corn, tomatoes, you know, green beans. And then, of course, in the wintertime, you're getting kale, cabbage, carrots, stuff like that. So it really is a unique way to eat locally, but relevantly to the season. I think that's pretty neat.
So the farms that these winter crops come from, let's say, for example, you know, that's typically a cornfield. Do they literally change out and reseed? Well, what do they do?
So typically not corn in the traditional sense. Most of the corn that we grow here is for livestock feed. So now if they have sweet corn, obviously, in their garden patches, certainly they'll transition that into a winter type product. A lot of them are grown in greenhouses, especially through the winter. It's called a high tunnel, which is basically a greenhouse that's just a Quonset-shaped greenhouse with just plastic over it. And that just keeps those crops protected. They'll grow them in either raised beds or right in the ground within those greenhouse structures.
I've seen those structures. Now, do they have to put new plastic every year on that?
Every few years they do, yeah. I mean, that plastic has a shelf life, so to speak, of probably 3 to 5 years. But of course, if a weather event comes along, hail, you know, I think about every time a big storm comes through, how much stress that must put on our farmers that have greenhouses, because it doesn't take a lot for a greenhouse to get lifted up or torn to pieces, and that's their livelihood.
You know, you go down to places, you know, towards like West Tennessee, Selmer area, Dyersburg. A lot of those areas are fairly low-lying next to the Tennessee River, next to Mississippi River and some. How do those farmers handle flooding? I mean, because that's a real thing.
It's catastrophic.
We got it here too, just not as bad.
Right. And that's just the risk that they, I think they're aware of the risk, you know, being next to a body of water like that in low-lying land. And you're just praying that it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
But it does. It happens. We see these floods coming in more and more, especially in Tennessee, I think in the last 10 years. I mean, that just the volume of water that falls and the amount of flooding that occurs has certainly increased.
But the soil there, totally different.
Oh, it's super rich.
You know, that I guess that's the perk of it.
Right. And that river bottom soil is worth the risk.
And a lot of sand, too. You know,
sandy,
you don't realize
silty.
That until you drive there and you actually see the sand mixed in with the dirt.
Absolutely. And for a lot of crops, that's a good thing, you know. It's just the risk they're willing to take by growing in that good, productive river bottom soil.
Do we see a lot of crops coming from West Tennessee into Middle Tennessee?
Not a whole lot. You know, we are fortunate, though. We have enough producers locally. I don't ever really hear of much coming in from the West.
Yeah.
So we're very fortunate.
What about farmers who sell to grocery stores? You know, that's something that years ago, well, it was normal for Kroger to be more local, and they had crops coming in. I mean, I'm talking, I guess, 1950s was when you did that, but they don't do that the same way anymore.
Well, it happens, but it's on an industrial scale. Typically, we have huge vegetable operations, especially in East Tennessee, Upper East Tennessee, and Western North Carolina. You'd be shocked at how many massive operations. I was at a farm in Western North Carolina about 3 years ago, and they had something like 1,000 acres of tomatoes.
Wow.
1,000 acres of tomatoes. It's staggering to even consider that. The amount of work that goes into it, it's just unreal. But those are the stores that are producing vegetables for your big, or those are the farms that are producing for your big box stores. They're just growing on a huge volume.
So North Carolina, and I wouldn't even have guessed North Carolina.
Right, yeah, that western part of North Carolina, right at the edge of the Appalachians, they're very productive soil, and it's good climate for growing a lot of our vegetable crops. So very productive area.
That's cool. You know, something else, you go to other countries and you'll see, well, you know, this country, they have a lot of, they grow coffee beans, you know, and they grow them on the mountainside. Right. Do we have that here in Tennessee where they're growing coffee beans on the side of a mountain somewhere?
I wish they would, but no, we just, our climate doesn't support it, unfortunately.
Has to be hot?
It has to be a little warmer, a little more mild. You know, I was in Hawaii several years ago, and there was in Kona, there was a coffee place called Heavenly Hawaiian Coffee, and they called it that because it was above the cloud line.
Huh.
And when we went up to the coffee farm, we were literally looking down at the clouds, and coffee beans were, or the coffee plants were growing up the slope there of the volcano. It was awesome.
Yeah, whenever you're in a country where they do grow coffee, coffee beans, you got to get some coffee there.
You have to.
It tastes
different.
It's
a must. It does. It's richer. It's bolder.
Yeah. And
it's just, you know, I'm no coffee snob by any means.
I don't even like coffee that much, but it is interesting to taste how different it is.
Totally different, and it's fresh. You know, a lot of times when you get coffee here, it's been, God knows, the journey it's taken to get to your coffee mug.
I don't think people, people get used to the taste, the flavor that they have,
instant coffee.
Locally, yeah. And if you don't have fresh coffee beans, you're not somewhere where, they just literally got them. You may not like it.
Right. It's just the boldness,
stout.
The richness. Yeah, it is. It's very stout.
Yeah, they serve it in smaller cups, too. It's like a shot glass of coffee.
When I lived in Florida for a few years, we had neighbors behind us from Columbia, and we went there one time for, I think it was New Year's or Christmas, and they had these little bitty, tiny little mugs, tiny little cups, and the coffee was like, it was thick, like syrup. I'm still awake from that coffee that I had 20 years ago. I've never slept since. Yeah, it was something else. It was delicious, but man, it would knock your socks off for sure.
And you drink it slower because it's just
to be enjoyed.
Overwhelming if you, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, if you try to ingest all that at once, whoo, buddy.
Yeah, you're gonna be spinning out of control or
absolutely
something. And so back to the winter crops, so we've got Brussels sprouts, we've got leafy type.
Any leafy vegetables, you think like spinach, lettuce, kale, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, that we call them the coal crops, basically not cold but coal, but you think about like onions and carrots and things like that, so Brussels sprouts as well. So there's a lot of things you can grow
with kale. I've heard so many mixed ideas, thoughts, and how people view it. Is that really a vegetable that's good for you, or does it have a high content of metals or things like that?
It is very nutrient rich. So, you think about something like lettuce versus kale. Kale is going to have more bang for your buck in terms of nutritional value. And a lot of people don't like kale. It's hit or miss for me.
It's like a tart taste.
It's a little bitter and a little tart. It's different. If it's prepared well, if it's mixed with a good salad dressing or even baked kale is phenomenal. It depends on how it's produced, but kale is very nutritious.
I've seen a lot of people lately buy more cabbage and put their cabbage into their salad. And it makes it taste different. I like it.
I love cabbage.
Good taste.
My last name is Stefanski, so cabbage is, when you're born into a Polish family, you're given a roll of duct tape, a pierogi, and a head of cabbage.
All that right
there. You're bestowed
there.
With like, all
hello,
three.
Here
yes.
It is.
Welcome to the world. Here's a cabbage, some duct tape, and a pierogi. So,
do you ever grill cabbage? You ever try that?
I have. It's delicious.
Really?
I will eat cabbage in any way, shape, or form. I mean, it's phenomenal.
There was a restaurant in Gatlinburg, and it was there for years, and it was like a Polish restaurant. I don't think it's still there anymore, but they had cabbage and they had, what else? They had bratwurst and stuff like that.
Right.
It was a cool place.
Good Eastern European hearty food.
But you never saw that many people there. It's like they were scared to venture in to try something a little different.
A little exotic.
Yeah.
Polish cuisine.
Now, if they reopen today, maybe it would be,
people
busier.
People would probably be more receptive. And plus, all us Yankees have moved down here and we're always looking for Polish food. So, it'd probably be a big hit.
It's interesting because as you do have more people from other sides of the country enter into your city, your area, people's tastes change, and you get new restaurants and you try new things, but taste buds and all that change over the years.
Yeah, I think people are a lot more adventurous now than they were, you know, social media.
Yeah.
You see all these recipes and just the different cuisines from across the globe. You know, Murfreesboro 25 years ago, it was catfish, French fries, and fried chicken.
It was.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. I ate plenty of it, but it is nice to have a little diversity in our food choices.
We used to have several catfish restaurants, and they focused on just catfish, fried catfish.
Remember the catfish place?
Yeah, I love that place. Man, the green tomatoes they brought out.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know how they made those.
I don't know, but they were delicious. Come in that little plastic bowl.
Yeah.
Man, we used to go there. I'd say we went there every 2 weeks when I was growing up.
It was amazing. And I wish I could have that recipe of how they made those green tomatoes.
And the hush puppies were just as good.
With a little vinegar on them?
Oh, man. Good times.
We haven't had that around. I don't know when it closed. It's probably closed down in maybe the early 2000s or so.
Sounds about right, yeah.
But yeah, that was a great place.
It was a big place. Remember?
It was, yeah.
Big high ceilings.
Very high.
Very industrial, but man, that place was awesome.
It was good. I wish we still had stuff like that, right. You know, like that down home.
Just unique food. Little country places like that.
We lack that in a lot of ways.
It's all chain stuff now, unfortunately.
It really is. It's like Rutherford County is was one of the number one places to open, you know, a large chain style restaurant.
Still is.
It's definitely still the case.
You see every corner around here, there's a new restaurant or something coming in.
That's right. In fact, I don't know if this is true, but you know how they shut down a bunch of Wendy's, like 300 Wendy's, maybe it was 600 locations. Anyway, they shut down hundreds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they build a brand new one in Murfreesboro.
Yeah, exactly.
On South Church.
That really says a lot, doesn't it?
It does. And it's crowded.
Absolutely.
You drive past there, and whatever time of day it is, there's a huge amount of people waiting in line at the drive-thru.
You got it. Those Frosties will pull people in.
Yeah, but you know, it is wild though how restaurants seem to survive here better than other places.
They know where to pick a good spot because, you know, this town is it's just bursting at the seams in every direction, and people love fast food.
Yeah, and we're getting a new Chick-fil-A on South Church as well.
Oh, that'll be good. Maybe the traffic won't be so backed up then on the one-year-old fort. It always blows my mind with the cops out there.
I know.
I'm like, my goodness. It's a good chicken sandwich, don't get me wrong.
It is.
But I just don't know if I would wait in line and be directed by a traffic cop to do it.
You know, places that have where you eat, you know, their chicken tastes better, fresher, whatever restaurant you're at where you do notice a difference.
Right.
But you can notice a difference in chicken and probably beef, too, at certain restaurants. And it does taste fresher at certain restaurants.
At Chick-fil-A, I think they soak theirs in buttermilk. I think. Don't quote me on that. But I think that's what gives it that extra juicy flavor.
Now, restaurants, do they buy directly from farms when it comes to things like, you know, poultry or cow, you know, beef? What do they usually do?
Not big chain restaurants. You know, they're going through distributors, food distributors. But, you know, local places, you think like Five Senses and places like that, you know, they're buying local. They're connecting with local farmers. But those are the exception, you know, few and far between.
And those types of restaurants, you know, they advertise that as advertising the menu. Those types of restaurants, you really can tell a difference in the food.
Totally different. You know, you think about beef and grass-fed beef versus conventional. Have you ever had grass-fed beef?
You know, I don't eat beef or pork because stupid tick.
A terrible question to ask you. I'm so sorry. But, you know, grass-fed beef tastes very different than your conventional beef. You know, it's a little leaner. It's a little, I don't want to say the flavor is not as rich, but it is different. And you can tell for sure. But yeah, in anything that's produced locally, the freshness of it, especially the vegetables. You know, you get a fresh produced vegetable that was on a farm 3 days ago and it's on your plate. There's a huge difference.
And one of the vegetables that really stands out to me for that difference of taste is tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. It's like that is the one that you can tell the biggest difference of fresh grown versus one you buy at the grocery.
And a lot of it is varietal. So the tomatoes, I'll use Subway as a prime example. You know, the tomatoes that you get at Subway, they're pale.
Yeah, and you got to ask, please give me the reddish one that you have.
So the variety that they use is grown for its shipability and shelf life, not for flavor or quality of the flesh. So it has a thick skin and it sits on a shelf and ships on a truck and it doesn't deteriorate. But the flavor flavor is awful.
Yeah.
Versus something like an heirloom tomato. It's called Cherokee Purple is my favorite. If you've ever had one, it has stripes on the outside. It's ugly looking. It's not pretty. It's warted up and dimply. But man, you slice that thing open and it is absolutely, it's almost purple in color and it's delicious.
That's huge one of those things you tell, just a major difference of
absolutely
fresh versus, you know, they got it at some distributor. Something else I've seen lately, and we had a question about this texted to us yesterday. They said, you know, next time they come on the air from the Ag Center, ask this question. Before I asked, I had to go look first to see if I saw what they were saying, and I did. In the meat section at some of the grocery stores, I've noticed after reading that text, their beef. It's like they put some kind of red dye into it now, and it was obviously dyed to where the ground beef looked a lot more reddish pink than ever before. And they said they noticed it probably about a year or so ago. Is there something that is going on as far as dyeing the color of meats at grocery stores?
I honestly don't know. That's a little outside of my... That's another investigative report that I'll do for you.
I guess, does the USDA allow for companies to do that with their beef?
Great question. I wish I had the answer. I don't know. You know, I've made this pledge in my career as a horticulturalist that the day that plants start biting or pooping, I'm out. So yeah. Cows do both, so I don't deal with cows for that reason, but you know, I'm not really sure, to be honest with you, but I can certainly get the research done, and next time I come we'll have an answer.
That'd be good, because you know, you do hear about, there's all these foods out there where companies, they purposely dyes in certain colors to make it look fresher,
right?
And that makes sense.
I have not heard this being an issue in the beef industry. I don't know. It's certainly, I like I said, I'm a horticulturist, so I don't want to make a statement and it be false, but yeah, I will find out.
Well, we're going to take a short break now. Yeah. And then we will be right back talking more about the Agriculture Extension Service and agriculture in general. Justin Stefanski on the air with us today.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios, MTE serves members with more than just electricity. Their community outreach team works with schools, parents, and students to provide engaging and unique learning experiences. MTE serving to make life better since 1936.
Local farmers, local meats, vegetables, and other produce at the Winter Spring Rutherford County Farmers Market.
Follow up and make your way every Friday at Lane Agri.
If you're near retirement or thinking about retiring, you probably have a lot of questions. How do you make your savings last? You're ready for retirement, but are your finances? Let's work together to help ensure your finances can keep up with your unique needs over the long haul. I'm Edward Jones Financial Advisor Lee Colvin. Stop by our office in the Public Shopping Center on South Rutherford Boulevard or give us a call at 615-907-7056 for an appointment. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
Holden Hardware has been serving the hardware needs of this community since 1948. This is Raleigh Holden, Jr. I want to thank our many customers who have helped to keep us in business all these years. I also want to invite those who may be new to this community or have not been in the store lately to visit us. Come experience a unique hardware buying atmosphere with wood floors, old furniture and fixtures, along with a helpful and knowledgeable sales staff. Holden Hardware on the west side of the public square since 1948.
This message brought to you by the Central Tennessee Regional Solid Waste Planning Board. Visit RecycleRightTN.com for tips, ideas, and locations on where to recycle near you. That's RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle right, it's all on you. Don't be trashy, recycle classy, recycle right.
Go to RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle Right Tennessee.
Local farmers, local meats, vegetables, and other produce at the Winter Spring Rutherford County Farmers Market.
Bundle up and make your way every Friday at Lane Agri Park.
W263 AI Murfreesboro. W270 AF Murfreesboro.
This is Tina Fox at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op. Please come see us for all your fall gardening and home needs. We have everything you need to make that yard look beautiful, whether it be grass seed, fertilizer, or anything to decorate that yard. We have everything you need to make your lawn beautiful. The Co-op Farm and Home Center is located at 985 Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off of South Church. Weekend shoppers were open from 7 to 2 on Saturdays. And remember, you don't have to be a member to shop with us.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Justin Stefanski is on the air with us from the Lane Agri Park, the Agriculture Extension Service. I mean, I could go on and on with titles of that place. I mean, there are. It's Lane Agri Park, UTTSU Agriculture Extension Service, the Rutherford County Ag Center. I mean, there's
like
a lot of
to go by as many names as humanly possible.
Good. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, but, you know, Lane Agri Park is the complex, and then, of course, I work for UT Extension, and we have UTTSU agents as well.
See, you're even doing it, too.
Yeah, we love our acronyms, and, you know, there's just so much, yeah.
But the reason for that is because there's so much involvement. I mean, you've got UT, you've got TSU, mm-hmm. you've got the county. Right. There's just a lot.
It's a unique partnership for sure, because it's county-owned property, but UT and TSU support extension there. So, and we do have the premier extension facility in the state, hands down. There's not another county extension office that has the grounds like we have, and just the physical footprint that we have to do research and have demonstration gardens. And we're very fortunate here in Rutherford County to have that property.
Is there an extension office in every single county.
Yep.
95.
And that's a rarity nowadays. A lot of states have gone to one office for,
District.
Yeah, a district office for four or five counties. And it's hard. You think about one extension agent that covers, let's say, livestock or cattle. You know, how relevant and how practical is it for them to serve all those counties? And it's very difficult. So our state has been gracious to us, and we're very fortunate.
And ironically, I would guess those that have, you know, like district offices in some areas, it's probably areas where there's a lot of rural, country farms, and they got to travel a lot.
There's a lot of traveling that goes on, and you're just hamstrung by geographic distance, you know, where we're fortunate here. Somebody calls us, we're able to get out on a farm visit or a site visit within a matter of maybe the same day.
Yeah.
So we're very lucky.
Now, do you work with the MTSU Ag Center, Agriculture Department, rather, as well?
I do. Actually, I hosted a class from the Plant and Soil Science Department yesterday out at our vineyard. Last week, we had a forage class that was out there, so we're very lucky to have MTSU locally, and they do bring students out, and we work with them on a regular basis.
And I remember now, it was MTSU, whenever they started their fermenting program there,
right?
That they got involved with y'all and all that stuff.
And that vineyard that was there was an MTSU-started project.
Cool.
Like 25 years ago or so.
I think it's pretty cool that you have vineyards now here in Tennessee.
Right.
You know, 15, 20 years ago, when I was in high school, for sure, I never would have thought we'd have vineyards here.
Yeah, I mean, we actually have a wine trail now.
Yeah.
Like the whiskey trail.
It's wild.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. And you've got it, you know, even, I guess, in Rutherford County, other than the Extension Service.
Right.
There are vineyards here.
We do have a cluster of vineyards. Of course, I live out in, you know, Eagleville area, and we're just down the road from Arrington Vineyards, which is huge.
It is huge, and it's beautiful. You know, it's a cool place to visit.
It is.
It's so big, it's open, and the hillside is cool. You know,
it's beautiful.
It's a cool thing, because farmers are able to grow grapes on a hillside.
Right.
That's
where they
unique.
Like to grow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they like to be up
neat.
On a high slope, and you would think about, you know, where does weather settle? It settles at the bottom of a valley or a ridge.
Yeah.
So those sloped areas, they dry out quicker, they get cooler in the summer, but then they get warmer it's just the perfect spot to grow grapes.
And by the way, our phone line is down, so if anybody listening, if they want to text questions in, you have to text it in 615-893-1450. We had some kind of short, that one line shorted out, but can still receive text on it. We haven't figured out what happened yet.
The joys of modern technology.
And we're about to build a new building. So
that's
we thought, what are we going to do with the phone line? That one phone line, the phone company, well, we don't use the phone company anymore.
Right.
You know, it's all internet-based.
Right.
Voice over IP. So we're trying to figure out what to do with that, because you don't want to invest, you know, $4,000 into a phone line that's about to be pointless, you know?
My son will never know what a phone looks like.
I know.
An actual phone.
Yeah, only businesses.
Yeah.
It's a rarity these days. But anyway, we're about to build a new building. in a few months. So we're going to start over with new phones.
Good. I like it.
Yeah, that's cool. Maybe we should have a vineyard on top of it.
I like it. Let's do it. Yeah. Green roof.
Yeah, well, I mean, places like New York, Chicago, where you have, you know, these high-rise condos and stuff, people grow on those high-rise condos.
You know that the convention center in Nashville has a green roof?
I was going to ask about that. Yeah. So have you been up there?
I have not been up there, but I talked to the guy that grows the plants for it. He came and talked to us several years ago. He's actually on the 4-lane as you're headed up toward Woodbury. There's an operation that's to the right, right before the four-way stop there. I forget the name of it, but he provides all the plants that are on that roof. It's pretty cool.
Is there grass on the roof of that convention center?
There's grass. There's flowers.
A lot of grass.
Yeah, a lot of grass. And they're, you know, like there's sedges and other things and rushes that are suited to grow in that type of environment.
How do they mow it?
I don't think they mow it. So it's not grass in the conventional sense, like a lawn, but it's more ornamental type grasses where they're just, they let them grow up and they get anywhere from a foot to 2 foot tall.
And what does that do as far as heating and cooling the building? I mean, is it a natural insulator?
It is, absolutely, 100% natural insulation. And there's several, I'd say it's a 7 or 8 inch layer of a soil mixture on top too, which insulates as well. But it helps, especially in the summertime, that heat is just trapped by those plants and it helps keep that building internal temperature down for sure.
To imagine building a building and then having grass and plants on top on the roof, the structure has to be stronger, I would guess.
The engineers engineered that thing to hold a lot of, that's a massive amount of weight up there.
Yeah. So the next house, if I build another house, you know, one day, put grass on the roof, I guess I'll have to have a special roof for that.
You know, steel construction. And then, you know, you got it.
That
absolutely
would be a little pricey, but cool
idea. But it's worth it for the roof lawn.
It is. And you see in, you know, magazines and online houses that are partly underground to where, you know, it's the dirt, it's the grass that insulates the exterior of the home. And it makes a huge difference on those things, I'm sure.
And you get to feel like a hobbit every day of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, geothermal heating and cooling, another cool idea.
Absolutely.
But you have to have the right land for it.
Have to have the land, and it just costs a lot. It's very cost prohibitive.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. It would be very expensive.
The infrastructure involved is much different than just your conventional, you know, timber frame house.
Do you get questions about things like that, about geothermal heating and cooling at the Ag Center?
This was the first one I've ever gotten.
Well, mark it down. You could have more after this.
Right. So maybe the flood is coming. But I don't really get a whole lot of questions about that.
What is the number one question this time of year?
Trees. I have had more tree questions going into, and turf. Turf and trees seem to be the dominant questions we get this time of year.
Can you keep a lawn green this time of year? And if so, what kind of grass?
You'd want to grow a cool season grass like fescue or ryegrass. And then, of course, the Bermuda grass goes dormant in the winter. So some people will overseed with like annual ryegrass will pop up and be green all winter long. And then as soon as the heat comes, it dies out completely. And then the Bermuda comes back. But it is possible to have green grass year round.
I think the best setting, some of those homes that are further out in the country where they have, you know, 5-10 acres or so, they have, I don't know what kind of grass, or immediately surrounding their house, but then maybe in the field that's theirs, maybe an acre in front of the house or so, you see just this tall grass growing. And it's year-round, and it looks like the grass never grows over 3 feet or so. It's just, it's pretty looking. But it looks like it's maintenance-free. I don't know what that is.
It's probably Kentucky 31 fescue, which is just a forage-type fescue, but it's still grown, and it stays green, and it's very robust. It's a mound-forming grass, so it's very durable, tolerates the heat well, and it's in many of those pastures that were there, and then they build a house, and the fescue's still there.
So they may put sod down around the immediate area of the house, and then put Kentucky fescue or already have it.
It's probably already there.
And just let it grow.
Absolutely.
Let it be wild.
And it is very pretty as well. I like it.
It is. It looks like, you know, a countryside pasture from a magazine, maybe in London or somewhere. Yeah. I don't know. Somewhere
it's
in the United Kingdom.
Charming look to it, doesn't it?
It does. It does. That would be a cool thing to have. Maintenance-free is the best part, though, where you just let it grow all year.
Right.
And all you maintain is right there next to your house.
And you got it. It's the way to go.
That's a good idea.
You know, a lot of people are using fake turf now.
I've seen that.
Especially for pets, you know, if you have a small like townhome, there are companies that'll come out and put down fake turf in your backyard, and it has so many layers it'll permeate well and things like that. So I see more and more of that used. I can't say I'm a huge fan of it as a horticulturalist. You know, I like real plants.
But yeah,
it's out there.
And I've seen, you know, different homes for sale where they have the picture of the backyard, And they have that fake turf, and you can tell it's fake, but man, it also looks so great. Real.
Looks amazing.
It does look good.
It's very expensive.
I mean, can imagine.
Oh man, it's just super, super expensive.
Well, I mean, you look at the cost of carpet. Imagine paying for an entire yard.
Right. And it's not just the product, it's the sublayers that go into it. There's a lot of engineering that's involved to allow that water to permeate, and then there's some substrates that they use. So it is a very engineered process.
Little pellets underneath it.
Yep,
and
you got it.
Then I guess a bed of sand at the very bottom or something weird like that.
Different layers. Yeah, I remember, off topic slightly, I remember MTSU's football field when I was a kid. We would play football there once a year. Remember the old turf? It was that AstroTurf.
It was painful and very hard.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you hit your elbow on that turf, you're missing skin. Yep. And I remember when I was at MTSU, they got the real, you know, we call it the GURF, the nice artificial turf. It's just night and day difference.
Yeah. No. It is. And it's soft. I mean, when you walk on it, and you can actually see when they're playing football, little black dust, I guess little black pellets of some kind.
Yeah, little rubber pellets that help keep, just structurally stabilizes it and keeps it in good working order.
So if you have that kind of turf, if somebody pays for that for their immediate area in the backyard, maybe around a pool or something, it looks amazing, but I do wonder, how much does that kind of stuff cost? You know, for a 10-foot by 20-foot area.
For example, I would say for your office here, how big is this? Maybe
14 by, let's say, 12? I don't know. It's not a very big studio.
You're probably looking at $15,000.
Are you serious?
No joke.
Wow.
$10,000 to $15,000.
So the houses I see for sale that have it in the immediate area in the backyard, they're probably spending over $100,000 on that stuff.
It can get that high for sure.
That's crazy. I'd rather have real grass for that
Absolutely.
Price.
Absolutely. Any day of the week.
I'll pay somebody to mow, the rest of my life for that. We're already out of time, though.
Unbelievable.
I know.
Steve, it's been great.
It has
Thank
been,
you,
Mike. Mike and Mike. Well, we will see you again soon.
And I'll have some answers for you when I come back.
Lane Agri Park.
Find old Sparky.
Agriculture Extension Service and Winter Farmers Market tomorrow,
yes,
starting at 8 a.m.
8 to noon. You got it.
Sounds good. You're listening to WGNS Murfreesboro.
Hey, this is Van with Music World and Drummer's Den. Come in for, guitars, keyboards, drums. We have lessons for anything with strings, mandolin, guitar, bass, you name it. We have lessons for anything with keys, Music World and Drummer's Den, and a professional drum teacher as well. So if you need to learn to play something, we have you covered. Come on in, buy you an instrument, start learning today at Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course.